All right, thank you. Me and technology, we don't get along so well. Well, welcome back. Hope you had a great break. So the last thing I want us to talk about is engaging. How do we actually do this, right? How do we take that step from learning about our context to praying to engaging, to crossing that culture for Christ, as we titled our time this morning? And I'm going to be upfront with you. I don't have an ABC. If you do these things, it's all going to work out fine. I don't have that for you. It's too complicated for that. But what I do have is some suggestions for how you can start, or how you can go a little bit deeper in this way. And I pass out a handout. I don't think that we're going to have time to go super into depth with this today, but you can take a look at it and maybe fill it out on your own time. But we are going to touch on it, and I think it's a great tool. But I want us to start with talking about engagement and being honest about its difficulty. Now, I mentioned earlier that I have found it to be way more difficult to engage cross-culturally with the gospel within my own context here than I ever have when I have been overseas, even when I don't speak the language, even when I'm working through a translator to try and share the gospel. And I would imagine that most of you, I see some head nods, can attest to that as well, to that feeling of it's actually harder here than when I went on my short-term mission trip to Mexico. The question is, why? Why is it more difficult? Why do we find it difficult, especially as most of us in this room are from the majority culture, so we are living in as comfortable of a place as we are ever going to live? Why is it difficult? So that's a question for the crowd. So,
compartmentalization is, you know, work stays at work, home stays at home, church stays at church. It's a challenge for me.
Yeah. Sorry, Robert. Yeah. And then we'll come back.
My experience is when I go into another culture, I can no longer be on autopilot. I have to be intentional. And when I'm intentional, I'm more focused on relying on the Lord. And I don't know, that seems to be part of it for me.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Sometimes I think, okay, am I going to offend them and not ever be able to talk to them again? Or is it going to put a barrier that they see me coming and they say, oh, she's going to talk about God again, which is, you know, terrible for me to say that. But
right.
True.
Yeah. Yeah.
My problem is being open with whoever you're going to be talking to, sharing my insights or the things that I feel that, the things that I don't do right, the things that, so that they'll feel comfortable sharing their life. I have to be willing to open up my life and share my thoughts and successes and failures and
Stuff
like that. And that's very difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah.
I think there's also a presupposition in our culture that, oh, you're a Christian? Oh, well, that means blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I'm not going to listen to you because I already know all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. And I think that's magnified by Christian sort of heresy that, like, God says I should love everybody, so, but if they don't like me, I must not be loving them. So I got to make sure that they like me. So I don't want to be confronting anything that they might not like me. I think those two things kind of work together. And so it's, you can't even get started.
Yeah. Chip?
I think there's a cost associated with it. So if I share the gospel with my neighbor, then I have to invest in their life, and they will see me during the week in and out, and there's an extra cost to that. And I might rather do my ministry at church, you know, then God will take care of the neighbor.
Yeah. One more, yeah.
We do get comfortable, and so we're back in our routine, and I think we forget there are people looking for what we have. So I know I'm not as intentional, and you know, the experience with ELL, I've realized there are people looking for what we
yeah.
have. And so it's made us be a little bit more intentional with our neighborhood as well. But we forget. We just
right.
get
comfortable. Yeah, and I think that's a great way to lead into what I would share as well, which is that it's uncomfortable. Like, again, we're talking not just, it's uncomfortable for most of us to share the gospel. If we're honest with ourselves, most of us in the church in America don't feel super comfortable sharing the gospel as it is. Crossing cultures with the intention of sharing the gospel is super uncomfortable. Because you're going to make mistakes. You know you're going to make mistakes. Because some of us, let's be honest, don't have a very high cultural competency. And we know it about ourselves. Or maybe we do, and we're afraid, though, that we don't. It can be frustrating. Crossing cultures can be really frustrating. You sit there, talk with someone for an hour, and walk away and have no idea what they said. Like, that happens. It can be really frustrating. Or you're talking and you're discussing a topic and you both walk away and you're like, man, how did he not get it? How did she not get it? It can be frustrating. And then I think there's one other thing that wasn't hit on that I think is important that we touch on, and that is that we have biases that we have to acknowledge about ourselves. You know, that has been a huge conversation in the church in America. It's been a huge conversation in the PCA about diversity, about what are presuppositions that we all have, whether you're African American or white American or Asian American. It doesn't matter. We all have biases. Let's talk about my Qatari friend that we've talked about at the beginning. If I'm honest with myself, I think one of the reasons that I didn't engage deeply with him and his family is because I had biases. I didn't recognize them at the time, but I did. See, I'd already spent 7 years in the military, and while all of my time I never had never deployed to the Middle East, I had many, many friends who did. And those friends would come back, and they would talk about their experiences. They would talk about specifically the Saudi soldiers that they worked with, or the Qatari soldiers that they worked with, or the Iraqi soldiers that they worked with. And how it was such a miserable experience. They would have very few good things to say about their work ethic or their, you know, fill in the blank. And so I've been listening for 7 years unintentionally, and as someone who knows the world and knows better, to these guys and gals who would come back and have nothing good to say. And so I know now that I walked into that relationship. When I walked into that room and saw three Arab soldiers sitting in that room with me, that I had biases. I love them. I do believe that I love them. But I had those inherent biases that I think partially prevented me from engaging in the way that I should have with them. And so what I handed out to you, and if you don't have one, I think that I can pass out a couple more. There's some floating around in piles. Is just a little assessment. And I would encourage you guys to take a little time. Maybe this will be the action step you choose to do. To do a little reflection on your own presuppositions, on your own biases, on your own cultural competence, and where you're at. Because if you don't know where you're at when it comes to your cultural competence, your ability or capacity to cross cultures, you're not going to know how to take a next step. And these are things, they're pretty open questions. Do you truly value diversity and celebrate that? Do you understand your own cultural background? You know, that's something that many people have been wrestling with, I know, in white culture in America these days. Like, how do I understand my own white American middle-class culture? That's something I've had to wrestle with to come to better understanding, because we can't begin to identify and understand other people's cultures till we understand our own. And so I encourage you to take a few minutes at some point to go through this and then think about, hey, okay, this is where I'm at. What area here can I work on? Do I need to dig more into myself? Do I need to be more willing to go and celebrate with other people their cultures? So those are some of the reasons why it's hard and why we need to understand ourselves first. But once we do, I think that's the final step to saying, okay, I'm ready. Okay. I've learned I've prayed, I've come to understand myself and my own biases, I'm ready to engage on a personal level. I'm ready to go ahead and jump into that cross-cultural relationship. But what are some ways that we can do that? And I've broken it down into two kind of avenues for engaging cross-culturally for Christ. And you may feel more comfortable in one of these than the other. But I encourage you to look and think about what I'm about these ideas that I'm going to share, and maybe pick one to start doing. So the first category is relational involvement. The second is programmatic involvement. And obviously, if you're involved in ELL, you're building relationships, but that's a structured relationship, right? We've created a room and a situation and a context for you to build a relationship through a program versus a purely relational, I'm going to go say hello to someone I don't know and make a friend. So relationally or programmatically. So let's talk about relationally. I probably don't need to list these because you could probably come up with these yourself, but one of the things that I would say is that it starts with coffee or beer or burgers or whatever you're into. I'm into coffee, I mentioned, so if anyone wants to get coffee, let me know. But it starts with that. You know, if we're earnest and honest with ourselves, building a relationship, whether it's with someone like us or someone completely different from us, is still building a relationship. It's about our willingness to say, hey, let's grab a beer after work. Or, hey, you just dropped your kid off at school. Why don't we go get coffee? You're a stay-at-home mom, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Let's go get coffee. I want to hear about you. I want to hear about your culture. Maybe you choose to attend the Chinese service here that's held. For those of you who are working in ELL, I don't know if you've ever gone to the Chinese service. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But go to the Chinese service. Or go to the, you guys, there's a Korean church that meets here as well, right? Right here. You may not understand anything that happens. You may not understand a word that's said, but go and shake some hands. I guarantee you it will mean something to them. But don't just go once, go twice, or three times, or four times, and build that relationship. Connect with your school administration about the students that are at your school. Find out if there is a new immigrant family that has come and say, hey, we'd love to start to welcome them. Just so that someone says hello to them. And maybe you don't even need to talk to the school administration. Maybe you see them at drop-off or pickup, and you just go out of your way to start making a friend. But at its foundation, start with asking a question. Just have the courage to ask someone who is different than you a question about themselves. And don't be afraid to look the fool. The reality is that when we choose to engage cross-culturally for Christ, we are going to, at times, look the fool. Because we're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. People are forgiving. People are incredibly gracious when you try. I was just sharing during the break that one of the great privileges of the work that I've been doing with Mission to the World is I've had the opportunity to engage with a lot of the Korean-American churches that are part of our denomination. They're predominantly, a large number of them are on California and the West Coast. But I don't know anything about Korean culture. I didn't. I didn't know anything about the differences between first gen and second gen and third gen Korean Americans, about their church life, about their relationships, about how their view of missions. That's been a huge, my brain's exploded as I've tried to understand all of this. But what I decided to do is I said, okay, I'm going to find a couple of guys, have them be both second generation Korean-American pastors, who will help me to learn. And I told them up front, I don't know anything about culture. I don't know anything about, I eat Korean food and I like it, but that's basically the extent of my knowledge of Korean culture and Korean Presbyterian culture, no less. Help me to learn. And I've asked some dumb questions. I've made some dumb assumptions. But they've graciously taught me the ins and outs of how to interact with the first-generation senior pastor of the big Korean ministry as opposed to the second-gen Korean-American English ministry pastor, because they're not the same. But I had to ask a question. And I had to be willing to be wrong and make mistakes. And they were gracious because they knew that I earnestly wanted to understand. And through that, we have built a great friendship, crossing cultures in that way. And the last thing I would say is attend a culture event. I am sure there is more than one in Seattle. And go just learn. It's a learning thing. So that's relationally. The second, I would challenge you guys to be involved programmatically in a program that, especially for those who may not have a high cultural competence or a high self-confidence in your ability to cross cultures, volunteer in the ELL program. Volunteer to participate in First Nations ministry. Volunteer to go outside of your local church and work with World Relief here. Or pick your an international student ministry here in Seattle that's working. There are so many programs that are available for those who say, I know that God has commanded me, has called me to cross cultures for Christ, to be involved and to build relationships and share the gospel through that. And so that would be my encouragement on the programmatic side. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that. But those are just a few of the ways that you can start crossing cultures. And what I remember or remind you is that you're not just doing it to teach people English. You're not just doing it to make the new immigrant family feel welcome at your school, or your kid's school, your grandkid's school. Yes, those are all good things. But you're doing it for the same reason that we tell our neighbor who we're more comfortable with the gospel, because we've been told to share the gospel. Like at the end of the day, like that's the command we've been given, is to share what we have. That there are people, whether they look like us, sound like us, or they don't, who we've been called to tell them what we have, the freedom that we've been given in Christ. And so my encouragement is that as you think about crossing cultures, the first step might be for you to grab coffee with someone. But the hope and the desire is that it leads to crossing cultures you're doing it for Christ. You're doing it because we've been commanded to do it. And you're doing it because we want to have God's heart, and that is a love for the nations. So what I would end with is just a challenge to take one incremental step, one small step, maybe you're ready to take a large step forward in crossing cultures for Christ. And that might be, hey, I'm going to go learn a little more about my city because I don't know very much. That's a great incremental step. Maybe that's, hey, I have someone in my mind right now who I know probably wants a friend. They could use a friend, like my Qatari friend, my missed opportunity. Take that step. Commit to taking that step. Maybe it's, hey, you know what? Let's be honest. I haven't prayed for any of these things in a long time or ever. Commit to saying, I'm going to spend, you know, once a week, I'm going to set aside time to just spend a little time praying for the nations and start there. And maybe, just maybe, someone here in this room or someone here at the church is ready to go, somewhere locally, is ready to go somewhere globally. And maybe you're ready for that step. And if so, talk to Shiv, talk to Tom, talk to me. And we're here to help guide you in that. But my challenge is to take one step forward. I think that is all I have as far as that's concerned. Like I said, I wish I had an A, B, and C. I don't. Every context is different, but I think if you learn and pray and take a step to engage, it'll happen, and God will honor that. So with that, I think we wanted to have a few minutes, if I'm correct.
Yeah, about maybe 5 or so minutes.
5 or so minutes. If anyone has any questions for me or for Shiv from what we shared today, And then we're going to close with just a little time of kind of guided prayer for cross-cultural gospel witness. And I've got a handout I'll give out here in a second to help kind of guide us through that. But, yeah.
Yeah, since we all share a common humanness, are there any common topics or issues that's going to work cross-culturally with anyone just because it gets to the heart of who we are?
Absolutely. I think that anyone you talk to, they may have different views on family, but they understand family. They understand love. You're gonna...
I wanted to show this earlier, too, something you said. I think I've been in a little bit of a unique situation because I've hosted so many international students. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of assume you meet one Japanese, you know what Japanese families are like. But you don't. Just like in our culture, there are no two families alike. And I don't know. I try not to think I just go up with each new person, no matter what culture. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even there. I think it came from, I don't know which pastor said this once, but any marriage is like a foreign country because there's two countries that have come together, whether you're from the same culture or not.
Any marriage
is a brand new country. Yeah. And each person you meet is from a different country, whether they grew up in Japan or, and then again, war has scattered. I've learned much more than I realized. I had a young lady coming from Holland, and I thought I was getting a Dutch-speaking person. Her family was from China, but several generations ago they had settled in Holland. She spoke perfect Dutch, perfect English, and perfect Chinese. Just a unique individual.
Yeah.
And just keeping that in mind that there are no two families the same.
Yeah. And that's right. I guess at the end of the day, what you hit on is an incredibly important point, which is that we're all still people. Like culture, yeah, we're different, but at the foundation, we're all people. And we all love and we all hate and we all... Like, those things are, as you build relations, that's why I said building relationships is building relationships. It may be easier or harder, but it's still people. People, I have always said, people are people no matter where you go. Yeah. You know, and that's just
and
the truth.
They come here believing that all Americans are Christians, and we're all wealthy, and I'm far from wealthy. And being in my home, they can see that, hey...
Yeah.
Not all Americans are the way they thought.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say, this is something I had meant to mention earlier, but I think that one of the things that we have to remember also in that is that, and talking about the comfort level and talking about like humanity, is that it flew away from me again. just that, like, it's as the majority culture, it's important. We have to be willing to take the first step. We, I think, so often expect those who look and sound different than us to come to our side of the aisle, right? Like that is, and it's true. And I've had this experience. I was at Presbytery yesterday with Shiv, and I've had the opportunity to go to a lot of Presbytery meetings. And when I joined the PCA, MTW and started going to these meetings, what I learned very quickly, and this is, again, we all are pretty similar, is that I was the minority culture in that context. We were all still people. We could speak some of the same language, but I was the minority. I didn't have my MDiv or an MA in theology. I wasn't ordained. I didn't wear the same bow ties, and I didn't speak the same theological language. And I had to learn, like, the number of people who cross the aisle to me as the minority, even in that context, were few. I have had to be the one who has learned. And so, as I think, just by being human and being willing to be human towards someone else in the minority culture will inherently build relationships. Yeah.
Just reaching out to somebody in a neighborhood where everybody's so busy
has to be, like Claudia said, intentional. So being the minority person that, or that's the neighbor that tries to be reaching out and be friendly, is really a big deal to people, to relate with one another.
Yeah.
Can I share a little?
Yeah, please.
I had an experience when our daughter was young, so that she was probably 15 years ago. We went to the Bellevue downtown park, and there was a young woman with a child, and our daughter was 3, and she was speaking a language that at that time I was not familiar with, so I turned to her and just asked her what language she was speaking, and she looked at me and said, "Oh, Arabic." And I said, "Oh, and where are you from?" And she was from Tunisia. And as we got to know each other, so we struck up a friendship, and she told me that it was right after 9/11. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of suspicion toward Arabs at that time. And women would actually, they'd be in a play area, women would actually grab their children from her child and tell them that they couldn't play together. And she was so lonely for friendship. And so I know we don't have a lot of little, we don't have parents with young children, but we do have grandparents in here. And that is just a simple way to, you know, when you have your grandkids at the park, to just strike up a conversation, be intentional. And you know, I had no idea that that was ever going to turn into a longer friendship, but it did. And we had them over a few years ago, and the kids just came running into our house, like we were their long lost aunt and uncle or grandma and grandpa, I don't know. But it was just a really precious friendship.
Oh, thanks for sharing.
I want to introduce a term. I think we are all talking about it, but it's a topic for another seminar. But this is hospitality. Being hospitable. We think we need to have a nice and a clean and a tidy home to be hospitable. You can be hospitable in the church. Jesus was hospitable to people with no home of his own. So sometimes we set a very high bar for even home hospitality, that we are basically starving for relationship even within the church. And how do we even go out? That's even a higher barrier. So this is something even we are learning. Nami's not here. And I'm also mindful that we don't quite get hospitality, but hospitality is such a key piece in most cultures, even in American cultures. And because that is lacking, we are a coffee place culture. We go to coffee places, there are coffee places inside coffee places. But homes, we won't want people to enter. But that's the risk we need to take.
I appreciate that. And I think we may have wandered away from the question which was asked, but I think hospitality would be one of those answers, that I think that is a common human language, no matter where you go, that people understand. Yeah.
I've got two stories to share. We had a Korean student, I don't know, it's been 10, 15 years ago, stay with us for a week. I think it was through ISI, you know, while he was trying to get his apartment lined up and driver's licenses and all that. And about the second or third day he was there, we were all standing together, and he stopped his conversation with us, and he looked us up and down. He said, "You're not big. We don't carry guns." Wow. It's like in the movies. Everybody's big.
They do draw a lot of conclusions from movies.
So, you know, we might have our own preconceptions, but they do as well.
Yes.
And the second story I have is we had a ministry here a while back called Talk Time, and one of our guests just lost her husband, and she expressed or commented that she wasn't sure she wanted to live anymore. And Beverly still is friends with this lady, and she spends time with her and takes her to doctor's offices, and is like a mother to Beverly. And
I don't know what that is.
Someone's got a unique. Your darling wife called me.
I was like, it's not me.
So something to check off the list. We ourselves have needs for friendship and love and to make contact. So do that on that basis of, I'm going to be your friend because I need a friend. You're going to have a much closer relationship rather than one of, oh, you need a friend and I'm going to be the
good person.
Yeah. Yeah. Uber driving and Lyft driving, I make friends every day. And it's a great way to practice hospitality. So often, it's someone whose first language is not English, and so I greet them as, what is your first language? And it just opens up a world of conversation while they're in my car. And I often invite them here to church, but I don't know how many have come, but give them a little...
I have a really dumb question, but on that
there are none.
The assessment says, be aware that when you learn about others' cultures, you need to be prepared to share your own culture. I don't even understand my own culture, so how am I supposed to
That's a great question. And I think that was also number two on the second one down. It says, know myself. I have a clear sense of my own ethnic, cultural, and racial identity.
Well, I can understand myself, but I don't understand I'm uncomfortable in my own culture sometimes, so I don't really understand it.
You know, that often happens in the process of crossing cultures. So as much as I am willing to embrace I'm Indian, I learned more about India after marrying into a non-Indian. Mm-hmm. So the more because that's the lens through which we look at everything. Mm-hmm. But when we start looking at something else which starts to give a new shade to our lens, we see what was the previous lens we were looking at. It just happens in the process, not before it, but during it, I think.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, it's a great answer. Nope, I have nothing to add to that. I think that's great.
You also don't realize how much you know about your own culture, oftentimes. Something, interacting with various like Middle Eastern countries, a firm handshake. Here in the United States, a firm handshake is a warm and enthusiastic welcome. In the Middle East, a firm handshake is someone trying to achieve dominance in the relationship.
That's the same at Sacred Road, it's like that too. But yeah, I'm just thinking, they're going to ask me, why do you celebrate whatever? And I'm like, I don't know. We just do.
At least you're a great opportunity for a second conversation, right? You know what? That's a great question. I am going to have to go read about that a little bit. Why do we do that? No, but I do think what Shiv hit on is right, is that I think you don't have to necessarily feel comfortable in all of it, because we're not, okay, we are strangers in this world, right? Like, that is, as believers, we shouldn't feel super comfortable, I don't think, in our culture, or there are things about our culture that we will not understand because our lens is different. You know, again, we're going back to that lens analogy. And again, you don't have to be, I am the most knowledgeable person about my culture. I feel comfortable with my culture. I think inherent by when you cross culture, some of those awkward conversations are going to happen because you're also going to get challenged on some things that you're like, I didn't realize I did that. That is true about me, or that's true about my culture. Or you're going to be challenged on some things that, as a member of your culture, are baggage that you carry just by being a member of that culture, especially as the majority culture going into that relationship. Yeah.
You know, some of these things you're not really fully aware of, even though you think you're answering them. And one of the things that, even your own culture, you're not even fully aware of what you're saying,
right.
What you really believe as your worldview. It's just there. And sometimes it's when you go into other cultures, it becomes evident.
It's true.
It's one of the values of travel to other cultures. Is that your own culture itself, your own assumptions about things become evident. Mm. And I think that's one of the great things about Christianity. It brings out within you some of the things that you're assuming and kind of compares it, say, hey, is that right? You know, I think that there's a lot to be learned about yourself and about other cultures, really.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks.
In the interest of time, we should pray. I think we don't want to close without praying. Is it okay if we go 5 or 10 minutes over? If you need to leave, please feel free. But let's not leave without praying.
Yeah.
And then we'll close.
Great.
Do you lead us, Zach? Yeah.
Yeah.
How should we do this?
So, like I say, if you have to go, please, by all means. So, what I had passed out, thank you for passing it out. If you didn't get one, we've got some up here we can pass your way. But it can be hard to pray about missions, Because often we don't know what to pray. Because our concept most of the time or a lot of time is missions is that thing over there. We can kind of get lost in, okay, what do I pray for? Or we're praying the same thing every time. So what I've done here is I've outlined some prayers for missions that you can take home. You can put it on your fridge, help you. And we can spend just a few minutes praying about this here before we close up. But pulled from scripture, some of the things that we can be praying for and praying through these scriptures. So we've got praying for open doors in Colossians 4, and I put the passage there. Pray for boldness and clear presentation of the gospel in your own life and those who are out ministering full time doing this kind of work. Pray that God's word will spread, that those who hear the word be receptive to the gospel. And again, these are things that you can pray for your local, evangelism and cross-cultural ministry here. Pray for protection and deliverance from evil men. Many of you have probably heard about the persecution that's been happening in China of our brothers and sisters there. Pray for their deliverance. Pray for new workers to be raised up and bring the gospel to the nations. We talked about Matthew 9 earlier. And that is for workers locally and workers globally as well. And so what I'd like to do is since in the interest of time, just take a few minutes and we'll do this kind of as just a corporate popcorn-y prayer of praying as you feel led for your local work, for your local community. I know that you guys have a prayer meeting, I think, tomorrow night for your missionaries. I encourage you to go.
Can I suggest maybe if we have two people pray for every point here, can we have two people pray for open doors? You can pray them as well. We'll go in that order. Okay, Jim and Jay, both are James. Pray for boldness and clear presentation of the gospel.
Another Jay. Jonathan.
Jonathan and Jeff.
I'm seeing a trend here.
Now taking Jay's.
Pray that God's word will spread. Jim, another Jay. And who else? Bettina. Okay. Pray that those who hear the word will be receptive to the gospel. Claudia and who else? Beverly. Okay. Pray for protection and deliverance from evil men. Randy?
My middle name is Jay.
Randy and Jenny, would you pray for that?
Sure.
Okay. Pray particularly for China. We know in China there has been new crackdowns on the church. Pray for new workers to be raised up to bring the gospel to the nation. Spencer, would you pray? And Doug? Okay. And then after that, Zach can
pray. Yeah, I'll close. Yeah.
And I'll say a word of thanks and then I'll
great.
Pray and close it.